everybody. Welcome to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and I would like to introduce you to our latest guest. She's a phenomenal woman in her own right, and she's going to share her inspirational messages with you today. Her name is Crystal Andrus Morissette, and she's a women's empowerment advocate. And she, I don't even want to get into all the amazing things you've done, Crystal. I'd rather have you share it because, you know, I just don't want it to sound written or rehearsed. I really want it to come from your own heart. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you. It's my joy. And I love that you even kicked it off talking about that election because, boy, what it's bringing up, eh? For men, for women, for what it means to be a woman. And so it's very near and dear to my heart. And I think this is, we're being called right now to have this conversation. So thank you for having it and for inviting me on your show today.
Absolutely. I appreciate you being here. And, you know, as a mom of a boy and a girl, you know, I'm just as concerned for my boy and the examples that he's getting of how you should be treating a woman and how you value a woman and what's acceptable and what's not, as I am about my daughter, you know, being a woman watching. You know, she's 6 years old and she's already forming her own opinions just from what she's getting from the media. And you know, and I shield them as best I can from things. But at the end of the day, they're Americans and they're moving throughout this society and they're catching what they're catching. Yeah. And so it's really impactful. So let's talk about your journey and how you came to become someone whose focus in life is women's empowerment.
Yeah, well, you know what? I know it's not a long show, so I'm going to try to give you the Cliff Notes version. There's a lot. I think there's a lot that always kind of the culmination of all of our life experiences brings us to the point that I think for me, I'm going to say forced, but I don't know that I was forced, inspired, pushed to finally decide to stand up for myself and for me to really learn how to protect myself. And I love that you just started, what does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a woman in this world? And so for me, you know, I was a sexually abused girl. I was stranger raped, and I say it that way, and not to be so insensitive and rough, but we're just jumping in. When I was 14 years old, I was, you know, I was literally dragged behind a bush one night and raped and left. And within a year, you know, I came from, there was a lot of dysfunction in my family. My parents had split up, and my mom had this brilliant idea that she would send me off to be a nanny for a family that had young children. And every night in that home, the father would come in, and I slept in the bunk bed underneath their son, their little four-year-old boy, and he raped me every night. And after about 3 months of that, I ran away. I had nowhere to go. And for about 3 years, I sort of schlepped around with my clothes in a black garbage bag. I found places to stay, but it was very traumatic. And I know firsthand what it felt to be an abused girl in this world and to have no place and the shame that sort of cloaks you. And you really question yourself, what could I have done differently? What did I do? And really, it gets into your blood and it starts to make you feel tarnished. And on some level, it just eats away at your soul. At 17, I don't know what possessed me, but I thought, I need to go have a doctor's checkup. I'd never had one really since I was maybe a little tiny girl. And I found out that I had human papillomavirus virus, which is transmittable. It's a sexually transmitted virus, and the early stages of cervical cancer. And I was only 17. And even then, I was homeless, taking the city bus by myself to get the treatment. I had no contact with my family. At 21, I had a traumatic head injury that it was just a series of just one turbulent trauma after another. And just the way that I was treated consistently from men, by the time I was 25, now my children, I have two daughters, they're 20 and turning 22 nearly, which is crazy to me. Back then at 25, I got pregnant, and it was so unconscious that I didn't understand why I'd put on 100 pounds. But looking back now at all that I've gone through and all that I've healed, it became this perfect cloak of protection to keep me safe. And so I really started having a different understanding of weight. And when I began to lose the weight, I thought, I'm going to help every fat woman in the world figure this out. And I lost the weight, and I self-published my first book. And, you know, I was on the Shopping Channel, and it was just one thing after another. Louise Hay saw me from Hay House down in California, and I was flown down to California, and I got my first book deal. And then I began traveling with Louise and Wayne Dyer and Marianne Williamson. And I was still young, and I thought, this is crazy. I don't belong here. But I, you know, the universe kept kind of showing me, you do belong here. And finally, 6 years ago, I decided it was time, and I launched. At that time, I didn't know it would be international, but I built a coaching program, a certification program for women for their own empowerment and their own healing. And it has just taken sort of me by storm. We're now in over 30 countries. I've been featured on Oprah.com 3 times in the last 3 months. I've been featured in the New York Post and the Daily Mail. And, you know, sort of I just really followed the walk that I needed to take to heal myself and to really find what it meant to be a woman in this world and how to sort of become a role model for other women so we didn't have to search fruitlessly for possibilities of who we could be and what we could be. And sort of that's now I'm at my 5th book, The Emotional Edge, that's just come out. And so it's been an incredible journey, a lot of trauma. But I think the point of telling those stories is once you have sort of walked through the fire, you can share that there is hope and there is a process and there is a place for all of us to heal and to really step into our greatness and our power.
Absolutely. And Crystal, you know, it's jarring to hear those words when you share your story, but it is so important to understand the depths from which you've risen and the strength that you've been able to pull out of your soul to become who you are today and share that with other women. So we thank you for sharing your story. We're going to be back with more with Crystal right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and you're listening to Working Mother Radio.
Across the globe, a child goes blind every 5 seconds. We live in a culture saturated with visual cues, but for some, the world is a blur. Since 1997, the Little Rock Foundation has been leading innovative social programs, advancing legislation, and providing information and education to those affected by visual impairment. Gain the resources you need or make a donation today to the Little Rock Foundation. Find us on the web at tlrf.org. You can make a difference.
Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are speaking with Crystal Andress Morissette. She's a women's empowerment advocate. And I know that you, in the past, our listeners have heard us interview Marianne Williamson, who is one of, you know, someone who I have gained much inspiration in my career from. And to know that, you know, Crystal has been guided by many of the women that many of us are inspired by and look up to, and has written five books. I mean, that's you really are committed to making a difference in this world, and I find that so commendable. And let's talk about the emotional edge and what's at the core of the emotional edge, your latest book.
Yeah, thank you. So, when I was launching the school, it was 2010, and I had staff, and a lot of it's online, so we had to, you have a great voice. So I'm going to go with that. So you have a great voice. And, you know, I was trying to talk to my staff, and I would say, guys, you're on a telephone, you're doing coaching calls, or you're a student advisor trying to influence or to guide someone into the programs, and you can't have that little baby girl voice. You can't talk like you're a little baby girl. You can't have that voice and sound like an empowered woman. On the other hand, I don't want you to be in, and I called it this without realizing, I said, I don't want you to be in daughter energy and that little baby girl voice. On the other hand, I don't want you to be in mother energy. I don't want you to be like, if somebody wants to do a call, it's Saturday night and you have plans with your family and you cancel your plans to take, you've got to show up like an empowered woman. You've got to be in your woman energy. And everybody went, what are you talking about? Woman energy, mother energy, daughter, what are you talking about? Well, I've never heard this before. And it was at that point that I realized, so I'd done all this work and I'd been working for, 15, 20 years, almost exclusively with women. And I said, well, it's sort of your emotional age. Don't you guys know about emotional age? And they were like, I've never heard of it before. So I actually got my professor of coaching. She was first a lawyer, then she became a psychologist, then she took my course and did my coaching, and now she works for me. I said, I need you to do some research. I need you to find out what psychologist has written, what practical psychologist is there about emotional age. She came back and said, no one's done it. I said, what? No one has done emotional age. I said, that's it. I'm coining it. I'm doing it. And so it took me about 5 years, in fairness. The other books I would write in about a month. They just boom, boom, blew through me. But this one took some serious research and really putting together these patterns. And so I created the idea that within each of us, like all the great thinkers, I'm going to put myself in there. Freud said we have this superego, this id, and this ego. Carl Jung said that we have the ego, the shadow, and sort of this collective unconscious that we all sort of align with, dreams, fairy tales, all of that within us. And I said, well, I believe this idea of this Trinity. You know, even in Christianity, there's this idea that there's the Father, the Son, and the Spirit part of what makes God, God. And so I thought, you know, I have this sort of angle, and it's that we all have this very selfless part of us. It's called your parent archetype. It's a part of you that gives to the point sometimes of self-abnegation. It's the part of you that will take care of and rescue and do all that you can do for humanity, for your family, for everybody else, but you'll forget about your own needs. And then we all have within us sort of on the other bottom of that triangle, I call the child archetype, and it's the more selfish part of us, the part of us that has dreams and wants things and wants to make it happen. And she's young, and she'll use her sex appeal, or she'll be a warrior, or she'll be a drama queen, or she'll do whatever she's got to do to get those needs met. And then within each of us, we sort of have this golden part of us, this evolved, transcended potential within each of us, which is really when we start showing up like an empowered adult. And so we all sort of swing between these. And when we can heal sort of the wounds of that inner child, that also causes us to sometimes show up to be much older than our age, chronological age, and to carry the weight of the world. There's a wound in there, and it's about healing that split, so to speak, so that we can really step into our greatness. And in truth, we've never had in the history of the world, whether you like Hillary Clinton or you hate her, this is the first time in the history of the world that we are actually having a woman, a daughter of the same patriarchy of which we've all been born into at this point, but it's now we have this woman that's sort of stepping up and saying, what does it mean to be a woman? Well, do we want to be like Hillary Clinton, or is she just sort of being forced into the box of what we're allowing right now? And so I think this is a really big time for women. You know, the Dalai Lama came to Canada in 2009 at the peace treaty, and he said, the Western woman will heal the world, and I think we're being called. And I think that's what's happening. And it's time for women to stop showing up as mothers and daughters, to really show up as women, and for men as well. To what does it mean to be a woman, and are you treating the women in your life like a woman? Or are you treating her like a mother or a child? And so this is really important work, and it's really kind of coined on this sort of practical psychology called the emotional edge, which Oprah has featured my quiz 3 times on discovering your emotional age. And so it's very powerful work. You don't have to be in years of therapy to do this. It's sort of you can start to realize, what do I do when I'm in my parent archetype? How do I show up in my child archetype? And if I could really heal that, what would I be like if I were my most empowered self?
So many points that I want to expand upon, and I cannot wait to take this break so we can get to them. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. Stay with us.
Don't be a wantrepreneur. If you're ready to become an entrepreneur, Benetrends Financial can help. Benetrends' proven and innovative funding strategies help real entrepreneurs like you get the funding you need quickly, safely, and economically so you can finally purchase that business of your dreams. Get started today. Call 866-423-6387 or visit Benetrends.com. That's Benetrends.com. Benetrends Financial, funding for the life of your business.
Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are continuing our conversation with Crystal Andrus Morissette. She is a women's empowerment advocate, and she's written multiple books about basically your journey and being a woman and what it means profoundly to be a woman. And the latest is The Emotional Edge, which we got into in the last segment. And I want to, before we get further into this, I want to find out for our listeners, Crystal, if they want to connect with you online, social media, find your books, learn more about what's inside The Emotional Edge, where can they go?
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, I mean, my name is just Crystal, just like a crystal, Andrus, A-N-D-R-U-S, and Morissette like Alanis. And if you put those together, you'll find me on Facebook. I reach up to 14 million people weekly now on Facebook, and you can grab a copy of The Emotional Edge just by going to my site, that site, theemotionaledge.com. And my school, my baby, it's called the SWAT Institute, and people laughed when I first did it. Why would you call a feminine woman's school SWAT? It actually stood for Simply Woman Accredited Trainer, but I would joke and say, because we are the new special weapons and tactical team that's going to heal this world, and we're going to do it with empowered women, with love, with compassion, with intelligence. We're going to use our words, and we're going to write to fight, and we're not going to use weapons. We're going to use our intelligence and our communication skills to heal this world. And so that's the SWOT Institute, and you can just go to www.swotinstitute.com, and I love your laugh.
Why, thank you. I was just watching our First Lady, and she's someone who I look to for much inspiration often.
Yes.
And she made a statement about women in other countries and the fact that, you know, it's been part of her mission to continue and support education of women across the world, not just in America. And she was saying that you can look at a society and how they treat their women, and it's in direct alignment with the health of that society.
Absolutely.
When women are lifted up and women are educated and women are empowered, that nation rises up.
Even deeper on a scientific level, it's called epigenetics. Epigenetics is the study of our genes. And what has been proven now, this isn't lulu woo woo, this is science. And the science is that if your mother was traumatized, your grandmother was traumatized, and let's be honest, all of our mothers have been traumatized and our grandmothers. Think about where your great-grandmother came from. I mean, 100 years ago, women, 100 years ago in the United States, you weren't even considered a person yet by law. It wasn't until 1920 that women even began to be considered a person. You couldn't own a possession. You had no rights over your own body. You had, I mean, what was it, 1960 when, or 64, Rosa Banks said, I'm not going to give up my seat. You know, so we're talking about a very short part of history in the history of the world that women are actually given some rights. But epigenetics is the study of our DNA. And what we know now is that when a mother has been traumatized, it actually mucks up the DNA of her children's brain. And so if we want to have healthy sons and daughters, we need to heal our women. Because our children are the byproduct of the women who came before them. And we know that the DNA of a child who has had a mother who's been traumatized, they have a disposition for depression. So you don't just inherit your mother's knobby knees. You inherit her pain. You inherit some level in your DNA, and this is why it's crucial that we invest in the healing of our women and the empowering of our women. If you want to have a son who's brilliant, take care of your wife.
Well said. And that really is at the core of everything that we stand for here at Working Mother is, you know, when we talk about paid family leave, and we talk about honoring the 100 best companies for women, and we talk about diversity best practices, and we talk about the policies that are going to make us whole as families, it's not just political talk. It's not just, you know, trying to change corporate America. At the core of this is we are mothers.
We're mothers. Bettina, in Canada, where I live, we have one full year paid medical leave. And right now our prime minister is vetting for 18 months. That means your job is completely secured. You get 60% of your pay. That's what we get right now. So the United States is supposed to be the best country in the world. And I have clients who have had children and 6 weeks later they're back at work.
Mm-hmm.
That's heartbreaking.
Oh, I have many friends who that's the story for. And it is
heartbreaking for the baby,
it's a reality.
For the mother,
yep.
And for your society.
It's a reality. And so what I'm hoping that our listeners are able to get from this and our time with you, and thank you so much for sharing yourself with us today, is the fact that we can rise up and we can be that we have so much strength and we have so much power, and it's within us all. And there are tools out there that we can use to tap into that.
And I have a lot of them. Like our school offers a lot of give backs. We have free mentorship coaching. Any woman living anywhere in the world can contact us, and we support her free of charge. We have, I mean, there's just so many give backs that we offer through the SWOT Institute, that it's not just the courses to certify someone. It's the support and the healing to get that woman just out of her own way. To you know, help her with that mindset, to deal with those trajectory changing moments and wounds so that she can heal her DNA, so she can heal her legacy, and so that she can really step into her power, because we're counting on every woman. When you heal a woman, you heal your community, and eventually that's how you heal the world.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Crystal, for joining us today. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Hey, it's Alan Taylor. Are you looking for an opportunity to buy a franchise, one that you can really wrap your arms around? Crunch Fitness is really a great opportunity for you. Now, here's a fitness company that's about 10 bucks a month to join. So even if you just want to join, it's a great deal. You want to check it out because I have been personally watching this company grow like crazy. Visit them online at crunchfranchise.com and be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, and have fun doing it.
Everybody, welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and it is my honor and privilege to welcome to our Working Mother team our new senior digital editor, Audrey Goodson-Kingo. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Audrey.
Thank you, Bettina. I'm excited.
I'm excited to have you. We always talk about on Working Mother Radio, our website, workingmother.com, and all the amazing content that we feature and the videos and we're constantly bringing you new information all the time. And it's so exciting to have you on board and overseeing all of this. Like, it's a great time right now for Working Mother, and there's so many great things happening. So thanks so much for joining the team and bringing us exceptional content.
Thank you. I'm excited to do it. There's, like you said, it's an exciting time. There's a lot of good content out there too. A lot of good ground to cover. So I'm excited to be part of it.
Absolutely. Now, one of the great things that you've got here up on the website under our family category is a story about someone who many of us have followed for years, Lisa Ling. I have great respect for Lisa Ling and the stories that she does. And she's talking about C-section risks and egg freezing in our new series on CNN. And you had a chance to sit down with her and talk about these subjects. And we'd love to get your take on what she had to say.
Yeah, it was really interesting because Lisa kind of came to it through her own personal experience, which was she had a C-section with her first child and everything was fine. And then when she had one with her second child, she got a hospital infection that led to a lot of complications. And so the timing just happened to be right because she was already working on this documentary for CNN about how births in the United States has become increasingly complicated and expensive. And she was just so interested in the topic, and obviously then she had her own experience with C-section that really just made her, question, why do we have such a high elective C-section rate in this country? And it really led to some interesting material.
It's fascinating because she talks about how prior to being pregnant and having children, she had some kind of intolerant attitudes about some things related to working moms and some of the challenges that they face. And I remember prior to getting pregnant with my daughter Cassie, 7 years ago, I got pregnant with her now. I remember starting to look into childbirth and C-sections and different ways to deliver, and not feeling, I went into it feeling as though I knew plenty. And by the time I started reading things and really researching information, I felt so ignorant. I felt like I knew nothing. And it's really nice to see that she's shining a light on this and really creating a forum for this conversation, because I think that a lot of us don't really understand the options behind childbirth and what goes on with elected C-sections and the benefits and the downsides and the financial aspect of it and all of that combined. And it's a lot to take in as a new mom or new mom to be.
Definitely. Yeah. I was in the same boat myself. I had a C-section with my son, and you're right. You feel like you've read all this information and you feel like you're prepared, but every birth is so different. And that's another thing that she touches on in the series, that, there's so much to learn and there's so much to know that, even people working in that field are still learning. And so to me, I was really happy to see her shining a light on some of these subjects.
Now, it was interesting because you actually went there and asked her the question, why do you regret your second C-section? And I found that fascinating because there are a lot of women out there who go into, after they've had a first C-section, they go into the next childbirth assuming that they need to have a second C-section. And she says there was no medical reason why she needed to do that. And I know many women don't realize that.
Right. Yeah. That's another, it's another thing that I talked about with Lisa that actually didn't make it into the interview, but obviously, another difficulty is that doctors in the U.S. are kind of reluctant to perform, you know, what's known as, you know, vaginal birth after C-section or VBACs. And so, you know, a lot of people don't even know that that's really an option because a lot of doctors are reluctant to perform those surgery form a vaginal delivery after a woman's already had one C-section.
Now, another interesting statement that came out of this was the two fertility experts, this is Lisa was saying this, the two fertility experts we talked to said the best gift you can give your daughter after college is to help her freeze her eggs. Now, let's talk about the conversation that led to that statement.
Yeah, it's really interesting, you know, and this is something that, you know, where it really applies to working mother and something that a lot of working mothers see is that you're building your career throughout your 20s and your 30s. And a lot of women now just don't really think about having children until they're in their later 30s or early 40s. And, you know, the point that Lisa made was, unfortunately, it is a lot of times more difficult at that point. The one thing that, you know, fertility experts know is that the younger your eggs are, you know, the higher your chances of being able to get pregnant. And so that's why those fertility experts that she talked to mentioned, you know, that that's a, for some, if you have the money, perhaps it's something you should look into.
It's fascinating to me because my sister started having her kids at 23 years old, and I was the, you know, the career one, and I was really focused on work. And I remember when I was 26, she's older than I am. I remember when I was 26, she said, "You need to freeze your eggs." And I looked at her like she was out of her mind. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm fine. You know, there's no problem here. I don't need to freeze my eggs. I don't know what she's talking about. She's on the crazy train.
Right.
And, you know, because it really wasn't something that people talked that much about. And I think the more we have conversations about things like freezing your eggs, the less jarring the idea becomes to women in their 20s and in their early 30s. Because to me, when that was brought up, it just seemed so ludicrous. And so,
right.
And like there was a lack of hope in the statement. You know, oh, what? I'm not going to marry the right guy. I'm not going to, you know, have my kids the way that I want to have them. Like you, because your 20s, you're really just so hopeful and you have all these great plans and things that you want to do. And it seems super pessimistic to me that to
right.
do something like that. And so, you know, there's that emotional side of things. And I'm not even talking about, you know, the hormonal emotional side of it, just where you are in your 20s and your mindset, the emotional side of that really, that's a big hurdle to overcome when you're recommending that women start freezing their eggs. Because I just remember that feeling of, you're out of your mind. You know, that's
right.
Just a silly. And it turned out, you know, I waited until my mid 30s. I waited, you know, I felt like I was under the gun by the time I had my kids. And it was, you know, and you walk into a doctor's office at 35 and they tell you your advanced maternal age and you're like, what?
Right. Yeah. I think I was reading now they're calling it geriatric pregnancy or something terrible like that. Yeah.
Right. You want to turn around and punch the guy. You're like, what are you talking about? Advanced maternal age. I'm fine. I don't know. Where are you going with this? But,
right.
You know, but from a fertility standpoint, you have to look at everything very differently. So I'm really glad that this conversation is being more, is opened up and being looked at more often and more thoroughly, because there are so many angles on this to examine. And Lisa Ling, I feel like, is just the right person to do it. Was there anything that she said to you that you felt was surprising, or that, you know, you learned something new in the conversation that you had with her?
You know, not really for the most part. I think, you know, the thing that really stuck with me was just, you know, that the main thing she wanted women to take from this was just to kind of release the stigma that,
comes with a lot of these things. And like you were talking about with egg freezing, for example, or with C-sections, one thing that we touched on was just the mommy guilt complex that I think comes with built into so many of these subjects, because everyone has this idea in mind of the right way to give birth or the right time, like you're saying, to give birth. And so, you know, when her main point was not to shame anyone, but to just say, let's talk about these things. Let's reduce the stigma. Let's really get the conversation out there.
Yeah, and I think that's so vital and so important. Thank you so much for taking this on and sharing this with us, because I think it really is an important subject matter and you did a great job of covering it. And we're so looking forward to more great content from you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. Thanks, Bettina.
Absolutely. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Everybody, welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and you all know that I am an avid reader, and I absolutely love finding new and awesome books for our kids. On our show, The Motherhood Corner on workingmother.com, you can see Bettina's book corner, and often I will highlight books that I feel are really special and that our kids will benefit from. Well, I found one of those books, and I'm so excited to share it with you. You know, I think that a lot of us struggle with our kids wanting to give up on things when they get too tough. I know I struggle with that, and it's tough because you don't want to be hard on them. You don't want to say the wrong thing. You want to discourage them by making it too tough. You know, it's really a fine line, and it's one of those aspects of parenting that isn't necessarily obvious, you know, what the right choice is and what you should be doing. And you really do have to tailor it to who your kid is, and it's tough. And sometimes that's when I turn to books, because they can speak to different angles with the same kid, and one of them will get through. And this book is one of those books. It's called Captain Perseverance, How I Became a Superhero by Brod Baggert. And he's a father of four, and he's got a great background, which I'll let him share with you. But he really does attack the perseverance issue in just the right way, in my opinion. So thank you so much for joining us today and sharing Captain Perseverance with us.
Yes, you're welcome. Delighted to be here.
So let's first start off with, why did you feel that this was a book that needed to be written?
Well, first of all, perseverance is a thing that was ingrained in me by my dad since I was a little kid. My dad would have a couple of beers and we'd be having a personal conversation, and at some point he'd slam his fist down on the table and say, "Get the dictionary." It'd make me look up perseverance and write it down. And it was fine when I was 10, but that kept going until I was 19. But he just loved the idea of perseverance. And then later on, not too many years ago, I learned about the research of this fabulous woman, Dr. Angela Duckworth, who created this little, what she called a grit test. It's a little bitty short, couple of minutes test, and perseverance is the primary characteristic inculcated in this notion of what she calls grit. And she gave this test to all sorts of people, different ages, West Point incoming freshmen, and across the board, the characteristic that was the most accurate indicator of future success was grit, perseverance, living life as though, in her words, as though it's a marathon, not a sprint. I listened to a TED Talk she gave, and at one point she said, and I get asked every day by parents and teachers how to instill this in children, and the honest answer is, I don't know. Well, it was like a volcano went off inside me, because I spend my life writing things to do exactly that, so that children read a story get engaged with it, maybe even laugh at it, and identifying with the heroine or hero of the story, experience the emotions of the story as though it were happening to them, and actually learn a principle or a fact firsthand, as though it's from firsthand experience. In other words, I could write a little poem and as a picture book in which this notion of perseverance could be communicated directly into the interior workings of a child, bypassing their conscious thought process. So I wrote Captain Perseverance because children love superheroes.
They do, and I have to tell you, I read this with my 5-year-old son and my 6-year-old daughter separately, and exactly what you're saying is what happened. They really understood it on a level that I couldn't have explained to them.
It creates a vocabulary for you then to communicate. So in the future, you don't have to say, don't hang in there, don't give up, and all this stuff. All you do is look at them and smile and say, Captain Perseverance, and boom, they're off and running, you know?
Yes, and it's as though, you know, I've just been given this tool that I didn't have before that is – and this was one of my larger challenges as a parent was getting this perseverance to happen. And now I feel like I've found like the silver bullet, and I'm so excited, and I'm really happy to be able to share this with our listeners. We're going to come back with more right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. Stay with us.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are speaking with the author of Captain Perseverance, Brod Baggert, and he's the award-winning author of 17 books, actually, books of poetry for kids, young adults, and adults. And what he's able to do with his style and his the way that he speaks to kids through this poetry is he really does give you a tool to teach them a very important characteristic in life, perseverance and grit, as he's calling it. So let's talk about the missteps that parents can take when they're trying to teach grit, because I know that you have something called the dictatorship of excellence. What is that?
Well, we all love our children, and we want them to succeed. And sometimes that desire for children to succeed can bleed into living vicariously through our children and having the success we always wanted but didn't quite reach. That doesn't always happen. But we tend to put pressure on our children without intending to. Now, I'm not saying that we don't want our children to succeed and to succeed well and to absolutely reach their full potential. So if we say all you have to do is be excellent in everything you do, that's just like dropping a building on a child. and the more talented and intelligent and the more capable a child has of achieving excellence, the more likely they ought to be broken by the expectation that they achieve excellence. So instead, and actually I started doing this with children. I visit schools around the country pretty much all the time. And one of my constant spiels is the notion of beginning with your worst as a writer. And this is not only true for writing, but it's true for everything we do in life. So this is a specific technique I would recommend to parents. And it's powerful, and it's easy to do, and it works. So I tell children, when you sit down to write, don't you dare try to write your very best. If I catch you trying to write your very best, you're going to be grounded for the weekend. What I want you to do is to sit down and write your very worst. I want to see spelling mistakes, punctuation mistakes, the whole thing. I want to see your worst. Then after you celebrate successfully writing your worst, you write it over again. And you don't, on the second writing, you don't try to make it your best. And you don't even try to make it good. You try to make it better. And then you write it over again, and you try to make it better. You write it over again, and you try to make it better. And the notion is that you avoid judgment about qualifying or judging what you're accomplishing. Because the minute you start judging yourself, you're into either success or failure. And if you're not there yet, it's failure, and suddenly all the creativity flows out and the willingness to continue goes away. But if you don't judge yourself, and instead you just keep working at it, making it better and better and better, eventually you get to your very best. In my case, I rewrite my poems 30 or 40 times, sometimes a good deal more. The essence here is to put children in a position, put them in the mind frame, that when they are trying to accomplish something, all they need to do is concentrate on the effort without judgment, and the notion of expecting less than their very best and always trying to make it better. And that way they actually achieve their very best and often achieve and reach excellence without being crushed by the expectation and the ongoing judgment of it. So what I would advise parents to do, whenever their children are about to do something, to smile at them and say, remember, you don't start with your best. Get in there, start with your worst, and make it as better and better and better by continuing to try. And in that context, perseverance becomes something that not only makes sense, but something that they're capable of doing.
It's two things. It's such a healthy way to look at accomplishment and how to get there. And the second thing is, it's really what you just described is really complex and layered, but you make it so direct and so simple in this book. And that, I think, is what the magic of this book is that there's a lot beneath it. There's a lot under the surface, but for a kid, it simplifies it and it makes it easy and doable. And that's why it's effective. And also the power, I know that we could go on for hours about this subject, but the power of poetry in teaching children is huge. And I'm a huge advocate of that, the poetry and music. And your poetry is addictive. It's so well written. So thank you so much for sharing this book with us. Thank you for taking the time to put so much thought and depth of thought behind this. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for this week. I can't believe these episodes go by so fast, and I have so much fun sharing all this information with you all. Don't forget to visit us at workingmother.com and let me know what you want to hear, what you want to see. I'm at Bettina Bush on Facebook and Twitter, and at Bettina Bush Official on Instagram, BettinaBush. And don't forget, there's no way to be a perfect mom, but there are a million ways to be a good one. We'll see you next week.
Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.